This is a Dragon Blazer production.
Welcome to the Pro Wrestling Apologist Podcast, where we are real Americans and we love pro wrestling, and sometimes both of those things are okay.
Only sometimes.
This is your host, Craig Atkins. I have a whole stable of people here today.
Stable.
Hey. We got the usual Steven over here.
Disgusting. Disgusting.
Hey, how's it going?
We got Summer over there.
Drunk Summer from...
We have Cornucopia over here.
Cornucopia! Terrific.
Kizea.
I'm jealous that she
has a Davey way over there.
Davey's all the
Cook
way over
Davey,
there.
Cook Davey, to be exact. Cook Davey.
Coach Davey.
Who is my boyfriend and her boyfriend.
We have a round table of people. Who here actually watches wrestling?
Me.
Summer, you actually watch wrestling?
I don't watch wrestling. I only watch it when Steven forces me because he won't change the...
Yeah. California does not watch wrestling.
Wow, that doesn't surprise me. They don't use straws either.
Also,
no, he's saying me. He doesn't want to say my name right.
We can't even take a shot, so calm down, Cornucopia.
I'm really scared.
Name
I don't want to
is
take a shot.
Kazuki.
Kazuki!
So,
I thought it was Kamikaze,
hey,
so I guess we're all on the same page.
So Drunk Summer is from the Drunk Like Me podcast.
Yes, the Drunk Like Me podcast. She does this podcast with Steven over here.
Correct.
Everybody just does a podcast with Steven.
It's such a good podcast, I don't watch the show, and I just listen to it because I enjoy Summer laying into Steven.
Oh, that's all it is, always.
It's,
even, that's, whole,
on
that's
Steven,
our whole
fear,
that's our whole friendship right there.
Yeah,
oh,
that's
man.
Ever... It's everybody's friendship with Steven.
If you really want a show, you should come to karaoke and watch Steven get laid into by Summer at karaoke. It's
oh my gosh.
Better.
And you know what? It's a twofer because then you get to see the Alabama boys with
the
their
Bama
cousins
boys.
Just making out with each other and singing sweet Alabama love songs to each
literally
other.
Literally sing nothing but Alabama
only,
songs.
I swear to God.
One band. One band is alive, and that's Alabama.
You guys missed last week. There was this one guy. He literally had, I don't even know what was going on with this man, but he thought the world was his oyster, and he was just going on and on. That the big guy with the cane.
The big guy with
and then
speaking
other,
of big guys named Kane, we're
going to
go right
there. We go. See, I set you up perfectly.
With this podcast. As you might know, if you're a good and loyal listener, we dropped a bonus episode this week where we covered AEW Special Event Fighter Fest. So you can hear our opinions on that show if you flip back to that episode. Go ahead, do that. We'll wait.
Time's up.
All right, welcome back. Glad you caught up. So, Steven, why don't you let me know some of your favorite and least favorite things from this week of WWE programming.
All right.
That was not head. Somebody urinating. That was...
I'm so sorry. I didn't expect it to be that loud.
Pouring.
That was more alcohol. Hi, guys.
So, I'm going to exclude Fighter Fest because it was essentially a pay-per-view.
Yes.
But,
that's why I said WWE programming.
Fair enough.
Way to go, Steven. Way to keep track.
A few things I enjoyed and didn't enjoy. Lashley murders Ricochet.
You didn't enjoy that?
No, I did enjoy that.
No, you did.
I mean, he was bleeding at the end. He just absolutely destroys him.
Did. I was glad to see Ricochet on TV. I don't
yeah,
know
there's that.
The biggest fan of him being murdered on TV, but I'm glad to see him there.
Yeah, he's done. He's no more after that match. One of the best / worst things I saw was R-Truth versus Ninjas. I mean, Akira Tozawa, and Truth won the 24/7 belt.
Back.
Big Show beat Angel and Andrade, and nobody really cared.
Wait, pause. Big Show is the guy with, like, the bathing suit that has one strap, right?
Yes.
This is her.
Okay.
Reminder,
this
Summer
is
does watch wrestling.
I do watch wrestling, but it's been
a
while, so I need a refresher course.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Big Show's not a real
I'm disappointed, Summer. Disappointed.
Listen,
they haven't really done anything interesting with Big Show.
Right, I haven't heard anything about him.
Neither had I until the, he
so we, faced we've got his attire covered. Go ahead.
We had Peyton Royce face Ruby Riott. I love seeing the Iconics do promos.
Peyton Royce learned how to wrestle all of a sudden. Yeah. She's actually, her finisher was great.
Although it's kind of sad, because I feel like they don't care much for Riott these days. And
I feel like they're kind of, I think they're going to reunite her with Morgan.
That might be good. I like Ruby Riott. She has a lot of potential, and I'd like to see her do well. And we're going to skip the main event, because that was my favorite moment. Has the favorite moment of the week for me. So we go to SmackDown. Matt Riddle manages to say bro 15 times. I counted it.
Actually kind of low number of bros for him.
Low number of bros. He just came out just like, bro, 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 bro. And then Ultimate Heel...
He's the bro that runs the show.
Yes. The Ultimate Heel King Corbin came out. And I like Corbin because nobody likes Corbin.
Yeah.
He's... the perfect heel where he's an actual heel that nobody actually likes. He tells Riddle he's facing Morrison, and that match was fantastic.
It was. Very good match.
Morrison countered a top rope move into a modified flipped rock bottom, then gets up and does the Spanish fly, which is also pretty much a flipped rock bottom. another cool spot was Morrison countering what I believe is the Bro Derek with a flip. Well, he didn't get it off, so I wasn't quite sure if that's what he was going for, but that's what it seemed like to me, like what he was going for. Morrison drop-kicked Matt to the ropes, and on the return, Riddle did a float-over counter into a powerbomb. That was a cool spot. And it was just a really fun match, and Riddle avoided outside interference by Corbin and then did a cradle spider pin for the win.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed that.
Yeah, it was a really good match.
Bayley and Sasha play their greatest hits, quote unquote.
Quote unquote.
And then Alexa and Cross show up and mock the champions before Cross surprisingly challenged her for the title. So that's interesting. You'd think that Alexa would be the one challenging Bayley, but Cross did. So I thought that was cool.
And it sounds like a lot of drama for wrestling. Like, I'm just going to be real. Like, this sounds like Jerry Springer.
That's all wrestling is Jerry Springer. Except nobody's... Well, I mean... Allegedly, no one's having sex.
Allegedly!
Same thing on Jerry Springer,
okay,
though.
Sex happening.
So, here's my best and worst of the week. The best of the week is the main event on Raw. Sasha tagged Dolph when he gets thrown into the turnbuckle. Drew then throws Dolph on the outside of the ropes. Sasha screams at Drew, yelling repeatedly, "Are you kidding me?" And Drew, listening but not giving a shit, notices Dolph groggily getting up with the help of the ropes, and Drew gives him a quick jab, knocking him off the ring. I laughed.
Yeah, it was good.
I loved it. That was my favorite moment of the week.
This just sounds like a night at work for me.
No.
And the worst is everything with Sheamus and Jeff Hardy. Essentially the main event, there wasn't an actual match, but...
And they've been building that up for weeks, too.
Like, Sheamus is trying to yell at Jeff Hardy for his, you know, drinking and... And, you know, I always love it when wrestling likes to bring in real things, because Jeff has had...
wrestling isn't the type of thing that you can drag drinking into, though. It's just, you know...
Well, Jeff has had an actual problem with drugs and alcohol.
I mean, I feel like it is a big deal, though. Like, because if you're going to your job and you have all these outside factors, yeah, that's gonna come into play when you're wrestling. Like, if you're hungover, you're not going to be on your top game. Or maybe you are. Well, maybe you're drunk as fuck and you're going to kill this guy.
Jeff Hardy infamously in TNA years ago showed up completely shit-faced to where he couldn't step out to the ring.
Are you serious?
It was legit. And he was supposed to face Sting. And for some reason I'll never understand, they actually had him go out to the ring knowing full well that he could barely, I mean, he was like stumbling his way to the ring.
So he got his ass beat.
Yeah, maybe we'll take a pause so I can show you this moment, but
yeah.
It was, Sting just kind of, like, rolled him up real quick and pinned him, and he was disgusted.
This was basically like,
he was, like, apologizing to the crowd, but, like, you know, everybody knew what was going on.
Everybody was mad at him for being a fucking drunk, like, is that, like,
and now he's allegedly sober, but he has had,
he has recently had some issues.
You know, arrested drunk and drunk driving, and that's, and they're bringing his real life.
I mean, I guess you do. I guess to be fair, wrestling. A lot of the kids that I know, a lot of the young boys that I know, look up to wrestlers very highly. So I guess I can understand.
I'm not in that group.
I'm a young boy.
I guess that I can understand where they're trying to squash that because they don't want the
young boys, they want their heroes.
They're turning his real life sobriety and drama into a kind of like a lesson.
Like, this is what happens, but you can change your life and get back on course.
I like that, but Sheamus just does not sell it well. He also didn't show up to the ring. He was on the Titantron instead.
What is a Titantron?
The big,
it's screen. Big
screen.
Right. Like in the middle of the ring where they're like, rustling, rustling, rustling.
That's all, you
can tell it, the Royal Rumble! That's the one.
But he was not even at the ring, and Jeff Hardy, I love watching Jeff Hardy wrestle. Jeff Hardy is not the greatest on the mic, in my opinion.
Right, I agree. I liked watching Jeff Hardy wrestle, but I agree that he's not as, like, a public persona as you would think he would be.
All right, we're getting this back on the rails again. And Steven's already fucking things up over here. Okay. So, not a lot of news this week, besides the big shows we already covered, so let's get right into the juicy patty at the center of this podcast burger. We're doing a quick and dirty profile on, well, I'll wait until you guys figure it out. You guys will figure it out along the story.
I probably won't.
Angus King. Does that ring a bell?
No.
Doomsday?
No.
Bruiser Massino?
Ooh.
The Christmas Creature? None of those names ring a bell.
What the fuck is a Christmas
for? Probably shouldn't ring a bell. What about Mike Unabom? No. Okay, what about Isaac Yankum DDS?
I do remember that one.
Getting a little more familiar. Isaac Yankum makes his debut as Jerry Lawler's private dentist on the June 26, 1995 episode of Raw. A 7-foot monstrosity in dentistry with extremely questionable bedside manner. I'm 100% sure he fills cavities using that old mercury composite filling.
Great times.
Everybody remembers that.
Good times.
Where it causes painful conduction in your mouth when you bite down on aluminum foil.
Pretty sure my dentist still uses that.
Jerry Lawler hires Yankum to help him rid the WWF of his longtime rival, Bret the Hitman Hart. Yankum's in-ring debut occurred at a Superstars taping on August 15th, where he lost to Hart by countout. At that month's SummerSlam, Yankum was disqualified when he hung Hart up on the top and middle ropes by his neck. He lost to Hart in a steel cage match in the main event of the October 16th episode of Raw, and then in a tag team match with his favorite patient and wrestling boss, Jerry Lawler, against Hart and Hakushi. After his feud with Hart, Yankum and his team, the Royals, Isaac Yankum, Hunter Hearst Helmsley, Jerry Lawler, and King Mabel, lost to the Dark Side, Batu, Henry O. Godwin, Savio Vega, and The Undertaker. This was at Survivor Series. You know, where they did the elimination tag matches. With that. They used to have them themed back then. Yankum competed in the 1996 Royal Rumble in January. Surprisingly, didn't go on to be the first dentist to win the Royal Rumble. Soon after, the gimmick of Isaac Yankum DDS was retired.
Okay, wait a minute. Did you say he hung a man from the rope?
It's a wrestling thing.
So the guy didn't actually die.
No, wrestlers care about each other's teeth so much. You got a pretty mouth, boy.
Not when I knock your teeth out.
In September 1996, good old J.R. Jim Ross introduced Diesel. But this Diesel looked an awful lot like Isaac Ancom DDS, along with Razor Ramon, who looked an awful lot like Rick Bogner. You guys know who Rick Bogner is?
Ricky Bobby?
Absolutely not.
Nobody knows who Rick Bogner is. I don't know. I guess he's the new Razor Ramon. Just deal with it. For some dumb reason, Vince and the WWF decided to gimmick these two men into the fake Diesel and Ramon to mock the departure of the real Kevin Nash and Scott Hall, who went on to WCW, and they did some stuff over there. They were kind of a big deal, brother.
Brother.
And as I mentioned, they were introduced by Jim Ross, who was portrayed as a disgruntled employee. The faux outsiders competed primarily as a tag team. They didn't last long because this was stupid. There's another one of the many awful gimmicks of our subject today. But this would be the last of those terrible gimmicks. Does anybody have any idea who we're talking about yet?
Kane the Undertaker.
Maybe. On April 1997, the WWF started to slowly build to the debut of a new mysterious character. At In Your House 14, Revenge of the Taker, the Undertaker, we know this one, right?
Yeah.
You know Undertaker.
I would hope you all know Undertaker.
Sorry, I'm quiet because I have no clue who that is.
He had a match against Mankind. During the match, Taker's former manager, Paul Bearer, attempted to interfere to help Mankind win. Bearer was met with a damn fireball to his face.
Is this the whole of Mankind, or is this just one?
This is a wrestler.
Mankind.
It was not all humanity.
The last time there was a fireball.
So I've met, and he's awesome.
Sorry.
Courtesy of mystical in-ring magical powers of the Dead Man, he shot a damn fireball into the face of Paul Bearer.
What kind of fireball are we talking?
A literal fireball, a ball of actual hot fire.
Not the liquid.
Not what I'm drinking.
Not liquid.
On the May 12th episode of Raw, Mankind introduced Bearer, who attempted to reunite with Taker, willing to put this fireball to the face thing aside. Taker's reluctant, and Bearer goes on to reveal the Undertaker's biggest secret. Taker declines Bearer's offer to once again align with him. Bearer began tormenting him by telling him that his long-lost brother, who Taker had thought was dead, was coming to the WWF to challenge him.
Oh no.
In the ensuing months, Bearer implied that Undertaker had murdered his family by starting a fire at their funeral home. Because, you know, when the dead man was a little boy, his family just lived in the funeral home.
They just lived there?
As one does.
As one does.
At least you always got people to play with.
Baby!
Oh!
But Bearer tells him that not everyone in his family died. Taker's little brother is alive, but was left physically and mentally scarred by the residential funeral home fire.
Was it a residential fire or a funeral home fire?
It was a residential funeral home fire.
So they lived at the funeral home. Calm down,
Calabasas. Let's sober up a little bit and pay attention. He lived in a funeral home. Calabasas. All right, Kentucky. Chill out.
Thanks for coming to the show a little late.
Did you call me Kentucky? Yes. Get out.
Listen, Jimmy Chupa.
You better sign off my real name. I'm so sad.
Undertaker claimed that his little brother by the name of Kane.
Dun, dun,
that's
dun.
Sounding more familiar. Was a pyromaniac, and he was actually the one who started the fire and could not possibly have survived. This is some great soap opera shit. I loved all of this.
This is Jerry Springer x10. This is
Dr.
Phil.
Is beyond.
This is Dr. Phil level.
I always like figured Dr. Phil was like a step down.
Dr. Phil has done some stuff, man. Right.
Well, we're going to bring this back on the rails. I loved all this shit, but man, I can't see any of this getting over today. Okay, now we got cats.
Your cats!
Just, no, that's just me.
He's very upset about Kane, man. He's super upset.
He's like, hold on, the kitties.
Back on the rails. At Bad Blood in Your House on October 5th, 1997, in the first ever Hell in a Cell match, Undertaker is just about to finish off Shawn Michaels in a hard-fought match. He does the cut across the throat, signaling the signature move, the tombstone pile driver. And the lights go out.
What?
And then a red light fills the arena.
Oh, snap.
Pallbearer comes out following behind a large man in red, wearing a red leathery mask. This man had a very similar size and stature to a dentist that had previously wrestled for the company. I'm sure that's not related.
Nah. Not at all. I don't see any relations.
I don't see what you're getting at there.
Undertaker looks like he's seen a ghost. JR with the classic line, "That's gotta be Kane! That's gotta be Kane!"
Do they all have classic lines? I don't watch Kane.
Yes.
Kane rips the door right off the cell. Kane and Taker have a face off. Taker is flabbergasted. Kane lifts his hands up in the air, drops them, shooting flames up through the four ring posts. Taker jumps back in shock from the flames. Kane kicks him in the midsection, picks him up, and gives him the tombstone pile driver, costing him the match. This is a historic moment, one of the best debuts in wrestling history.
Yeah.
And this is one of the most memorable moments in history for me. One of my favorite moments.
It was awesome. I remember when he just... when he ripped out off the cage.
Ripped off the cage.
Awesome.
The door of the cage. Yeah.
Broke on through to the other side.
They just don't do debuts like that.
No.
And to conceal the burns from the residential funeral home fire, he wears a mask with his long hair and red and black attire that almost covered his entire body. Kane also couldn't speak because of the fire.
Yeah, fire. Fire does that.
Kane won his first match against Mankind at Survivor Series. The Undertaker initially refused to face him, saying he would not fight his own flesh and blood. After a brief partnership, Kane betrayed The Undertaker when he cost him the WWF Championship when Kane interfered in his title match against Shawn Michaels at the Royal Rumble. After the match, Kane locked Undertaker in a casket and set it on damn fire.
Jeez.
Really,
that's how I'm going to go out.
Okay, wait a minute. I have some questions.
What could you possibly need, Colorado?
Listen, her name is Canada.
Okay, I'm confused. Like, do they all have backstories like this? Do they all live in funeral homes?
Everybody's got a backstory. You've got a backstory. I've got a backstory.
I've got a backstory.
But I doubt your backstory is I'm going to live in a funeral home and set it on fire.
I mean, that's how
I don't know me.
I set my brother on fire. That's why they call me Blaze on another show.
Did you really
I don't think that's why they
fire?
Call you Blazing on another show.
All right, we're getting back on the rails here. Okay. Damn fire. Though it was later revealed that Undertaker managed to escape the casket without being seen before Kane set it on fire. The following month, The Undertaker returned and defeated Kane at WrestleMania 14. After the match, Kane and Paul Bearer attacked The Undertaker. They continued to feud until Forgiven in Your House on April 26, when Undertaker defeated Kane in an Inferno match. Back to the fire again. Remember Inferno matches?
Fire!
Just the winner sets the opponent on damn fire.
This is a lot.
It's what this podcast is.
Damn fire. A lot of damn fire.
In this match, Bearer tried to help Kane by attacking Undertaker. But as Kane was retreating backstage, Vader forced Kane back toward the ring, and the Undertaker attacked the heels by jumping over the ring ropes surrounded by fire before setting Kane's right arm on damn fire.
Jesus, more fire.
Okay, just so much fire. Kane then went on to feud with Vader at Over the Edge in Your House. He defeated Vader in a mask versus mask match, where Vader finally removed the mask that had a few little tiny straps on it to reveal the face that you can mostly see anyway.
I'm learning so much.
You are. That's why you're here. Okay. On the June 1st episode of Raw is War, Kane defeated The Undertaker to become the number one contender to the WWF Championship. At the King of the Ring, Kane actually defeated Stone Cold Steve Austin in a First Blood match. Remember First Blood match?
First person
draws blood. Following interference by Mankind and Undertaker, and Kane actually won the WWF Championship. You remember when Kane won that match?
I actually remember that. I did watch
and
that.
Kane actually carried. Probably don't even remember that. Kane carried the WWF.
Yep.
Oh, wait. You talking when he won the title?
Yeah.
I was at the Wall after that happened.
Oh,
really?
So you probably remember what happened the next day then, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
A little bit.
Yeah, what happened the next day?
Shoot, it's been a while.
Stone Cold just won it back the next
That's
day.
Right. Kane yeah, he lost it the next night.
Kane
That's
carried
right.
the title for one entire day.
Right.
I was at that Raw where everybody was sad.
So, Kane then went on to form a tag team with Mankind, with whom he won the WWF Tag Team Championship twice after losing the titles and turning on Mankind. Kane formed an alliance with his brother, The Undertaker, team known as Brothers of Destruction. At Breakdown in Your House, Kane, the Undertaker, and Stone Cold Steve Austin competed in a triple threat match for the Austin's WWF Championship. Kane and Undertaker were prohibited from pinning each other in some convoluted horse shit. So they pinned Austin at the same time. This mess led to the WWF title being vacated. The brothers fought each other for the vacant WWF Championship at Judgment Day in Your House. Everything was in Your House at the time. With the match ending in a no contest when special guest referee Stone Cold Steve Austin counted a double pinfall and declared himself the winner. I don't think that flies. I don't think the referee can invoke a fuck it, I'm the champ clause.
I don't think Austin gives a shit.
During the match, The Undertaker betrayed Kane and reunited with Paul Bearer at Rock Bottom in Your House. Always in Your House. Kane interfered in the Buried Alive match between Austin, The Undertaker, attacking Undertaker, and costing him the match. As a result, the corporation had Kane committed to an insane asylum. And then in December, Kane joined the corporation to stay out of the insane asylum. That easy. Join us or get committed. He was later betrayed by the corporation and thrown out of the alliance anyway. So, Kane then went on. He's a babyface now. Kane then went on to babyface, whose face can't be seen. He went on to form a tag team with X-Pac, which was like my favorite tag team at the time. Young Craig was a huge fan of this union. Kane even acquired a girlfriend, Tori, while teaming with X-Pac. Do you remember this team of Kane and X-Pac?
Not
How do you not remember?
Well.
This was my favorite team.
Not too
Kane,
well.
I remember him becoming, like, getting a girlfriend. I remember that part, but I don't remember
Kane
the
chicks.
Team thing.
Kane started to evolve. He becomes an unofficial member of DX. Sort of like Summer, you're an unofficial member of the Pro Wrestling Apologies
I
podcast
am.
Today.
Maybe I'll be cool enough to be officially a member one day.
Like a Pokemon.
He becomes an unofficial member of DX. In a promo, his pal X-Pac says, if you ain't down with X-Pac and Kane becoming the tag team champions, then Kane has two words for you. Kane, who didn't speak.
Doesn't speak.
He started speaking a little bit with what do you call the machine that you put on your larynx?
Oh,
electrolarynx.
When you get a tracheotomy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kane would speak with that every once in a while. So Road Dogg hands Kane his little machine, and which he had previously used to speak with on occasion, not very often. And Kane raises it to his larynx, and X-Pac snatches it from his hand and says, you don't need that damn thing anymore. And Kane finally utters his first words into the microphone. Profound words. Those words were, suck it. So, something like that. team celebrates, they point at their crotch, all the stuff DX did at the time. Watching back now, it's damn silly. But as a young 16-year-old dopey kid, this was like the moment for me.
Right, right.
I think I wiped a tear. He said, "Suck it, guys." All by himself. I can't believe he said, "Suck it."
He's so proud of my boy. He's growing up.
He's, my big red machine is finally grown up. He said, "Suck it." So yeah, the big red machine asked to suck the proverbial it. Do you remember this? How big this actually felt? For some reason. It's silly looking back on it, but it was...
I remember because the next day at school, everybody was like...
What were they saying? Okay.
Yeah, they were like saying it all weird. And I was like, I don't understand. And then I saw it and I was like, suck it. Gotcha.
Suck it, yeah.
So, the duo won the WWF Tag Team Championship twice. I loved this team. I don't know why I loved X-Fox and X-Fox? X-Pac and Kane so much.
Copyright infringement.
Right.
Then, in a sad day for young Craig, the tag team broke apart when, during a match with the Dudley Boys, X-Pac tags his partner Kane in, gets behind Kane, punches him in the dick.
Aww.
Wait, hold on. What was that last part?
X-Pac punched his beloved partner who he spoke.
In the dick?
He learned how to speak. He punched him in the dick.
In the dick.
Wow,
Did he talk in Soprano through the machine after that?
No, he just... But he was pissed. He gives him the X-Factor and Kane reunites with DX. Kane and X-Pac. Why am I having trouble saying that today? Then engaged in a lengthy feud against each other into early 2000 when Kane's girlfriend Tori betrayed Kane and joined X-Pac at DX. The former partner's feud eventually ended at WrestleMania 2000 where Kane teamed with Rikishi to defeat X-Pac and Road Dogg. Kane returned on the May 29th episode of Raw when he helped The Undertaker and The Rock fight off the McMahon-Helmsley faction. His involvement in this feud culminated in a main event match at King of the Ring against Vince and Shane McMahon, and then champion Triple H. The Undertaker and Kane's rivalry returns, leading to a match between the two at SummerSlam. The match ended when The Undertaker removed Kane's mask, causing him to flee the ring, but Kane kept his face covered so nobody saw his face. Mm-hmm. Kane stayed in contention for the WWF Championship for the rest of the year and ended 2000 in a feud with Chris Jericho. Kane defeated him at Survivor Series and again at Rebellion, and he ultimately lost to Jericho in a last man standing match at Armageddon. Kane once again reformed his alliance with The Undertaker immediately after the Royal Rumble, where he eliminated 11 wrestlers and was the runner-up after being eliminated by Steve Austin in early 2001. Kane competed for the Hardcore Championship, defeating Raven for the title at WrestleMania 17 in a triple threat match with The Big Show. Kane and The Undertaker began teaming as the Brothers of Destruction again. In the course of the year, they feuded with Edge and Christian, Rikishi and Haku, and at Judgment Day, Kane defeated Triple H to win the WWF Intercontinental Championship. Kane lost the title to Albert on an episode of SmackDown following interference from Diamond Dallas Page during the WCW-ECW invasion. Kane Undertaker feuded with Page and Chris Canyon. Who better than Canyon? After Paige began stalking The Undertaker's wife, Sarah, the feud culminated at SummerSlam where they defeated Paige and Canyon in a steel cage match, resulting in them both holding the WWF Tag Team and WCW Tag Team Championships at the same time. Kane The Undertaker defeated Chronic at Unforgiven, and Chronic didn't last very long. They were a WCW team brought over, they didn't last. At Unforgiven, and both won in the 10-man winner-takes-all match at Survivor Series as members of Team WWF. Okay, on March 25th, the WWF was divided into two brands, Raw and SmackDown, with Kane being drafted to Raw. Kane shortly feuded with New World Order, who is now in WWF, and began acting more human and speaking more clearly by talking through his mask and referring to his fans as Canaanites.
Canaanites.
It was like a Hulk Hogan thing. Kane was acting like Hulk Hogan and calling his fans Canaanites.
Yes, because when I see Kane, I think of Hulk Hogan.
And he changed his mask to a sort of half mask, where you could see his newly chatty mouth.
Kind of liked his half mask, though.
Did he have a mustache?
No. Oh, or he had like a... He did have like a goatee.
Much disappointed if he didn't.
He had a goatee. WWF has now gotten the F out and is WWE, and Kane debuts as part of the Raw roster in August of 2002. On the September 23rd episode of Raw, Kane won the World Tag Team Championships with Hurricane after defeating Lance Storm and Christian. The following week on Raw, Kane won the Intercontinental Championship from Chris Jericho, despite interference from Triple H and Ric Flair. On the October 7th episode of Raw, Kane successfully, single-handedly defended the World Tag Team Championship in a four-team ladders, and chairs match, as the Hurricane had been attacked earlier that evening by Triple H and Ric Flair and was unable to compete. They lost the titles to Chris Jericho and Christian the following week on Raw. Kane then began feuding with Triple H, leading to a match at No Mercy on October 20th, in which both Kane's Intercontinental Championship and Triple H's World Heavyweight Championship were at stake. Now we get into some real memorable, stupid stuff.
My favorite stuff.
In the weeks preceding the match, Triple H claimed that several years earlier, Kane had a relationship with a woman named Katie Vick. He claimed that after Vic was killed in a car crash, Kane had had sex with her corpse.
Yikes.
Triple H later threatened to show video footage of Kane having sex with Katie Vick's corpse. However, the footage that finally aired showed Triple H dressed as Kane, humping a mannequin in a casket. This is obviously considered one of the worst, if not the absolute worst, segments of all time. It was just stupid. It was awful. Terrible. Everybody hated it. Kane's tag team partner, the Hurricane, responded the following week by showing a video of Triple H, rather than someone wearing Triple H mask, getting an enema. The stupidity continues. Triple H defeated Kane at No Mercy due to Triple H and Flair cheating. They finally killed all the stupid stuff, and they unified the two titles. On the October 28th episode of Raw, Kane defeated Triple H in a non-title casket match. No mannequins were in the casket. To end their feud at Survivor Series, Kane participated in the first ever Elimination Chamber match for the World Heavyweight Championship, which was won by Shawn Michaels. Kane then formed a tag team with Rob Van Dam, with the duo eventually winning the tag team championships. He won tag team championships with everybody.
Yeah, he won a lot. Seems like he liked the, I'm a big guy, and I grab a short, fast, speedy guy with me.
After they lost their World Tag Team Championship to La Resistance at Bad Blood, Triple H offered Kane a spot in his stable Evolution. What a guy. Raw co-general manager Stone Cold Steve Austin made another offer for Kane to have the opportunity to face Triple H for the World Heavyweight Championship. If he rejected Triple H's offer, however, co-general manager Eric Bischoff, at the time Bischoff and Stone Cold were like co-general managers, with Stone Cold being the face, Eric Bischoff being the heel. Bischoff insists that if Kane lost the match, he would have to take his mask off. Kane accepted Austin's offer, and I guess Bischoff's offer, and challenged Triple H the following week in Madison Square Garden. Triple H won the match following the interference from Evolution. And on the June 23rd, 2003 episode of Raw, Kane, for the first time ever, removed his mask. And oh, the horrors, the grotesque burns. And no, there weren't any burns. He just had, like, black makeup smeared on his face.
Oh, dear Lord.
And the revelation that the long hair was actually part of the mask. He had, like, a horseshoe haircut. Yeah. You remember this? You remember Kane unmasking?
I do. Mm-hmm. I do remember the unmasking.
The unmasking made Kane go off the deep end, a sort of gimmick change for Kane. He acted more psychotic and like a serial killer type character. He had bald head, no eyebrows, never trust someone without eyebrows. He was much more sadistic and scarier than he was with the mask on. In an interview with Jim Ross, Kane attacked Ross and set him on damn fire.
Not fire again.
It's a theme. He later attacked Linda McMahon on the Raw stage, starting an entertaining feud between Kane and Shane McMahon, with Kane defeating Shane in a last man standing match at Unforgiven and an ambulance match at Survivor Series later in the night. Kane also interfered in a buried alive match between Vince McMahon and The Undertaker, helping McMahon bury The Undertaker to win the match. In January 2004, Kane took part in the Royal Rumble match. He was eliminated when he heard the bell toll from The Undertaker's entrance music, distracting Kane and enabling Booker T to eliminate him. Over the following weeks, Kane repeatedly insisted that The Undertaker was dead, only to be met with various mystical, magical dead man wrestling events, such as a rainstorm in the ring above him. Yeah. That kind of stuff.
Undertaker stuff.
The Undertaker finally returned at WrestleMania 20 as the Dead Man, with the American Badass having been buried alive and retired, with Paul Bearer at his side defeating Kane. And this is where we're going to take a break and end part one of The Man Known as Kane. It's pretty exciting stuff so far, huh?
Very. I'm excited. It's like a very trashy soap opera.
Yes.
I love it. It's great.
This was Attitude Era stuff. This was kind of stupid Attitude Era stuff.
Now we're starting to get into Ruthless Aggression, wasn't it?
Yes, that's where we're starting to get into now. Kane still has a long career ahead of him.
Right. I remember watching this stuff, though, as I was young and just thinking, God, that's so cool. And then hearing everything as an adult, I'm like...
Kane was a really cool, interesting character.
Right, because you never knew what to expect, especially after he, like, I don't know, all of it. You never know what... Right, you never knew what to expect. But I remember, like, seeing...
Probably involved fire.
Right, and then, like, seeing The Undertaker for the first time. And the whole, like, eye roll thing. Like, I don't know. Like, all of this is just bringing back so many memories of when I was a grun... When I was young, watching wrestling.
You can watch it all on the WWE Network. It's all there.
And I will.
$10 a month.
I will.
I'm not getting paid by WWE.
This is not a commercial
promotion.
But I just
love WWE Network. next week, in part two of my profile on the impressive and lengthy career of the Big Red Machine Kane transitions into a serial killer on the big screen. There's fire. Some more fire. There's baby punting.
Baby punting.
Baby punting.
Yes.
There's counseling. There's counseling. There's another incredible, unlikely tag team that I enjoy very much. There's politics.
Ooh.
All that and so much more. We'll also be watching part two of AEW's Fighter Fest. Open wide. Daddy's feeding you some podcast dessert. Steven, plug your pluggables.
Alright, well, you can follow me on Dragon Blazer Productions on my Facebook page and also on my Instagram.
Go ahead.
Also, you can follow me on Twitter at Dragon Blazer Pro.
Summer, do you have anything to plug?
No.
I hear you have
no.
a podcast.
We do. We have a Dead Like Me podcast where we watch
What's
the
that
episode.
What's that podcast called?
Dead Like Me. No, Drunk Like Me. My
Drunk
bad.
Like Me.
I've already
Drunk
started
like
preparing.
Like you, currently.
I've already started preparing for the podcast that we're going to do next.
Yes, we're about to do that right after this
but,
episode goes off.
Yeah, check it out. We're a little less PG-13.
It's a fun podcast. I believe I said earlier, I don't watch the show, but I still listen to the podcast because I enjoy
it's a good time.
Give Stephen a hard time.
Always.
And, of course, you can follow this show at PW Apologists and forever and always. We love professional wrestling. Yeah, sometimes that's okay.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.